Hey, Bob WP here, and welcome to Woo Dev Chat, a Do the Woo podcast show. This show is brought to you by Avalara, who wants to help developers make sure their Woo projects are tax compliant and done right with Avalara's API. I'll tell you more about Avalara later in the show, but let's dive into today's Woo Dev Chat.
Well, hello everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Woo Dev Chat with me, Marcel, and Mike. Hey, Mike, how are you?
I'm good, Marcel. Happy Monday.
Happy Monday. So today we have a very special episode, and this is something we've been talking about lately as well in other episodes. Today we have a very special guest joining us for the show. But before we dive in, Mike, what have you been up to?
What have I been up to recently? I've been making some blueprints for caching login users, commerce and membership sites, and caching the cart so users can still browse around and see cached pages without having to view an uncached version of the page.
Oh, that's, you're talking about the subject of our next episode, because that's very much a subject we can talk for an hour long, I believe.
Yeah.
The thing that I've been, thank you for asking, Mike. Well, so I've been doing, just joking. I've been very busy with React things on the front end. So everything that has to do with hacking, I can say, the ways of React to present in either the back end or the front end. It's been also a very interesting journey. And also through that, I learned that there is a lot of spaces that you can inject code into the block editor that I didn't know about. This is all going to be probably also an episode, and I'm going to update my website with some of my discoveries. They're not super fancy discoveries, but I think they might help a lot of people in injecting code and creating just solutions for a block editor that are creative, I would say.
Are those spaces intentional, or are they overlooked by the WooCommerce?
No, they are intentional, but I think the use cases that I've applying them to are a little bit unconventional. Like, for example, having information update on the sidebar as you mess with other controls on the block editor. So sort of like making the sidebar or a zone of the sidebar dynamic according to whatever happens on the editor itself, and also the other way around. It's kind of been a little bit hard to describe without giving you a concrete example, but that has basically to do with grabbing all the JavaScript functions that you have access on the block editor that are exposed for people to use and using them in a way that is a little bit unexpected. I'm definitely going to be talking about that in an episode later. Also going to do a very extensive blog post about that, because I think it's very interesting. And our friends at Codable are also interested in having us explaining or exposing that in a call that we're going to do. So it's very, very creative stuff. I don't know if it has ever been done before. It's going to definitely make people scratch their heads about the usage that I'm proposing for this React components. But let's see. I think it's fun stuff. Usually we think about everything that needs to be according to specific rules and, oh, this features are meant to be used that way or that another way. And I like to explore a little bit more beyond that. And it happens this because of a client we were being working on. And I think it's very interesting to share with the world.
Yeah, that's really cool. There's a term in psychology called functional fixedness. And so like when you see a wrench, I had to build IKEA furniture recently, and the toolkit I opened did not have a hammer. You know, there was a wrench instead, which you typically use for screwing things, but we used it to bang in some plastic nails, right? And normally, if you suffer from functional fixedness, I need a hammer. I can only use a hammer to fulfill this task, but there are plenty of other ways to do it. So that's what your story reminded me of.
Yeah.
I think it's cool that we also share this stuff that we work on publicly, like the caching the cart and logged in users is actually been with clients on Kinsta, which is where our special guest works. So we're going to do a case study sharing the details of that one day, and it's going to be really...
Oh, that's really cool. Yeah, we should definitely go back to that one in our episode when that comes out, because caching and cards in the same sentence is not something that is usually...
People think it's black magic, and it also can work, which is really cool.
Yep. All right, then let's get on with the episode. Today we have a very special joining us on the show. His name is André Facka, and I have a very hard time pronouncing his last name, and I'm going to ask André about it because it's a very Portuguese word, as you might know already. But André Facka, he's a veteran web hosting industry with over 15 years of experience. He's currently serving as a senior support engineer at Kingston. André has a deep technical background in control panels, cPanel, WHM, as well as technologies like Apache, MySQL, XIM. He's also skilled in troubleshooting, PHP, HTML, CSS, JavaScript. André's experience is in leading teams and working closely across tech and non-tech areas makes him a true asset to any project. André, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
All right. So we've been talking about hosting in our last episode, and we've been covering general stuff that people need to know about hosting WooCommerce websites and the difficulties there are with the different offering that is out there and how to deal with different situations and problems. And basically, I think that the most important question people ask themselves when they start doing a WooCommerce site, how does the scaling of a WooCommerce website work for high traffic stores, right? Because when at the beginning, we start with very small traffic, but eventually we are working towards having more people to our website. What do you think should be the approach of scaling a WooCommerce website for high traffic stores?
Well, it really depends on the type of traffic that the person is getting, because there are various types of traffic. It could be search engine traffic. It could be genuine customers trying to browse and purchase products from the store. So it really depends on that. When it's traffic coming from search engines, for example, the best you can do there is to ensure that everything is optimized and using not as many cache layers as possible, but as many as necessary to ensure that it loads fast, because that's always going to help you in the search engine rankings as well. And it's going to be best for the performance of the website, because you're not really using resources as you would if you didn't have cache enabled. That's one of the approaches. Now, if the traffic is coming from real clients browsing and whatnot, the solution also goes through caching, but slightly different. Usually what I do when someone comes to me and has that kind of problem is to analyze the traffic. And one of the first things that I do is to check where the cache is being bypassed, because that's easily overlooked by everybody. A lot of WordPress and WooCommerce teams will have query strings on the URLs, and that forces a cache bypass. The same thing can happen for certain objects. So there are various techniques that you could use to force those objects to use cache. We do have a couple of articles on our website that actually help you to do that. When it comes to URLs, for example, when you're filtering items from a store, you'll usually see that the query string URLs, that they are used for the team to understand what you're looking for and whatnot. On those cases, I usually obtain a list with the help of the client, of course. We get a list of the ones that are used the most, and we try to force caching on them through the configuration of Nginx. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. This can be done on other web servers as well, but on Nginx, it has to go through the config.
So you mentioned that there are people who are coming from the search engine. They will probably hit the homepage a lot more than other pages, I would suppose. Mm-hmm. So does the homepage get a different treatment as every other page on a WooCommerce website?
It really depends on the theme that is being used, but usually it's different, because it's usually web developers will optimize it for speed and for cache usage so that it loads faster.
And when we talk about home pages, we're also talking about those landing pages that probably you will put on a search engine ads, for example, if you want to promote a certain product and you build those very fast loading pages. And you also mentioned that the ranking on Google depends or will be influenced by the speed that those websites, those pages load. Mm-hmm. And But when we are talking about people browsing on your website, so the organic traffic that you're talking about, that concern is more about the way that you build your catalog, right? You're talking about filtering. Filtering obviously is one of the most challenging and difficult things to do on a website. What do you think are other challenges? We were just talking about the cart page, for example, and the checkout. Are there other challenges for this organic traffic, and maybe some recommendations we can give to our listeners while they prepare for the most busy season of the...
When it comes to the shopping cart and the ordering pages, you're really forced to skip any type of caching that you have, because it's impossible to conclude transactions without it, with caching, I mean. What you could do on those cases would be object caching, like Redis, for example. It could help. But mainly, it would be to use some sort of caching to cache the objects, like a CDN, for example. It could help quite a bit. But unfortunately, on order pages, there's not a lot that you can do to use caching and to avoid the server resources from being used.
Right, right.
Depending on the server that you're using, you should have a good amount of PHP workers so that you can process the orders, multiple orders simultaneously. So apart from that, there's not a lot. Unfortunately, there's not a lot that can be done.
I found something recently with, I was doing an audit for a client who's hosted on Kinsta with New Relic, and I saw so many plugins executing on the cart and checkout pages that didn't need to be, like Yoast.
Mm-hmm.
Injecting Open Graph and a bunch of other stuff onto the cart page, which, as far as I know, there's no benefit to adding that kind of information to your cart page. So I think one of the things we can do is to eliminate the amount of code executing unnecessarily on the cart and checkout pages, because everything is uncached on those pages. You're sending data to the payment gateways and you have to add it to the database, and webhooks are firing and all that kind of stuff. We don't need extra stuff running that doesn't need to be. So it's just going to take more of the precious resources that we need for the actual money-making stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But that requires a lot more. That requires an advanced toolkit. And I think Kinsta's APM could help you identify plugins running on those pages as well, right? And be like, oh, why is, you know, the Gravity Forms plugin or something like that running on the, I don't know if it does or not, but.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. Yes, definitely. Also, to look for anything on the database that could be dragging you down, that can also happen. But when it comes to plugins, usually the problem is that store owners, not all the time, but a good portion of the time, they won't know how to do that because, like you said, it's not easy. You either have a good development kit for that, some sort of plugins that could help you there. If you don't, you really have to do it manually. And sometimes it's not really recommended because of the theme updates and whatnot. Usually that's tied to the theme. So there's always that. There's always that, yeah.
So the store owners that start with a new site, they usually get a lot of plugins because they want discounts, they want promotions, they want the loyalty program, they want affiliates, they want this and that. So there's a bunch of things that WooCommerce does not offer out of the box. So immediately at launch, we've seen, and I've seen throughout my experience, a lot of store owners already starting with 20, 30 plugins without even like caring about or knowing, not even caring is not fair to say, but they don't know that they're putting so much unnecessary load in different pages. And so once they start out and they get their first traffic in, the site is slow or some parts of the site is slow, or you're seeing a lot of resources being consumed on the back end. So the fact that we choose the right plugins is very important. How do you troubleshoot that? What is the practical advice that we can give for people who are starting out to know if their plugin choice is directly hindering the site performance?
One of the things that I noticed quite a few times with several clients of ours and even other companies that I worked for is that sometimes users read articles that recommend a large portion of plugins, but they don't recommend to use them all simultaneously. And they install them all This is one of the problems there. This is one of the problems there. Usually, what I do on those cases, if it's a matter of plugins running, you could use the APM tool.
Okay.
You could also use the browser tools, the inspection tools, to check on that. But like we were saying, when it's a large amount of plugins, it's inevitable that at some point you're going to have difficulties.
Right. And just for everyone who's listening, an APM, it's basically an application performance management. Or is it called like that? I think it is, right? Or application monitoring tool, basically, yeah, that allows you to measure individual web requests and transactions. It allows you to take a look at how much resources are being spent on a page load and how many requests are being made to the database and all of that, right?
Correct. It's application performance monitoring. That's exactly what it does. It shows you the external requests, which sometimes are also the cause for pages to take longer to load, because there's an external request before the actual page load completes, and that drags everything down. It's not uncommon to see that due to API calls. I've seen licensing servers causing that as well.
Wow.
Yeah, it's not as uncommon as people would think. All it takes, if you're using certain premium plugins, all it takes is one licensing server being slower than usual, and you're going to notice it.
Yeah, especially in the back end, WPI, man, it's one of the most common things I see with New Relic and other APM tools is five plugins, you know, premium plugins phoning home, and you're like, but I'm trying to check my orders. Why are you doing this?
We also have to remember that WordPress is not like an app that has background processes running all the time doing separate jobs. The opportunity that a developer has to run something is whenever people call a page, right? So whenever a page is called is when all the different stuff happen on the background, if I can say it like that. And so all the scheduled actions that we have and all of that get only fired or programmed or scheduled if there is actually an access being made to the website, right? So, and what I believe happens with those situations is they don't want to miss an opportunity. So whenever a request comes that might be just a cart request or any other requests, they don't have the sensibility to inquire first what type of access is being done so that I can make a decision about whether loading this now or relaying to another opportunity, right? They just go in and maybe take the most used filter on the WordPress system or action or hook, and just I'll run it right here. It doesn't matter. I'll take the first seat on the wagon and update this. And so people have to be aware of that, right? So and these APM tools allow you to sort of look into that. It's sort of like a microscope and give you the ability to exactly know what's happening under the hood.
I wanted to mention something as well that Andre said about, you know, a new WooCommerce store owner reads beautiful blog post that has all these cool recommendations. And it's not uncommon to see two or three page builders installed on a WooCommerce store. It's common to see two or three form plugins on a WooCommerce store. And I try to tell clients, like, treat your website like it's an F1 car. You know, like, if you want to win and perform well in F1, you don't just add any engine or any parts without thoroughly looking at them, examining them, turning them all over and being like, is there a way that we can tweak this and rebuild it so it only has the pieces that we need that our customers are going to value or that our employees are going to find beneficial? And I think it's, even if you don't like F1, it's, I think, an approach that most people can relate to. It's the same thing with your house, right? If you want to be able to find things and move efficiently through it, it can't be a big mess and disorganized everywhere. Like, things need to have a purpose and sort of are chosen carefully. You don't just get a massive table for your dining room if you have a small dining room, for example, right? Or a bed that's so big that you can't walk around and navigate inside of your bedroom. So I think that's really important for us as developers to educate WooCommerce store owners, because a lot of them aren't technical or are dangerous enough with the knowledge that they know to make negative impact without necessarily knowing why having a negative impact. So
Very good analogy, and I totally agree. Not to mention the plugins that always leave remnants behind them.
Yeah, that's one of the things we're doing for clients now is these database audits that are very, very thorough and look everywhere and anywhere. And one of the places, of course, is the options table, because that gets stuffed with a lot of leftover things, and plugins don't clean up after themselves well, 99% of them don't. And there's a reason for that, right? Because you can re-enable the plugin and then customers or the store owners would be angry. Where did my settings go, right? So you understand why developers make these choices, just like with Marcel mentioning the licensing checks. But I think we would all benefit more from people having this like performance hat on. Like the F1 manager is not going to allow the licensing checks to be happening while the tires are being changed in the in the F1 race. It just wouldn't happen.
Very good point. When it comes to the crown that Marcel was talking about earlier on, one of the things that we usually recommend doing when you're having problems with performance is to disable WP Crown, because at Kinsta, you still have a system crown job running the crown manually every 15 minutes. So that's one of our recommendations right away when people start having those problems. Because like Marcel said, if you have WP Crown enabled, each page load will do an enormous amount of actions, especially if you have a large amount of plugins enabled.
And so for people who don't have access to these APM tools, what do you recommend to optimizing the performance, and what else can we do? And turning on and off plugins is the old advice that almost always works, but are there any other like recommendations we can give people?
It usually, the recommendation that I give to clients, it really depends on how knowledgeable the client is when it comes to web development. But usually I try to help them to learn how to use the inspector tool on the browsers, because it helps quite a bit, especially if it's just a silly request, if it's just a request taking too long. But if that doesn't help, there are tools for that like New Relic. Also, certain plugins that do a similar job, Perf Matters, for example.
Query Monitor, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I usually try to explain also to clients when they come over and say my website is slow, that there are mainly two parts of it, right? The part that runs on the server and the part that runs on the clients on the browser, right? And because nowadays we're having a lot more JavaScript being loaded in different times, and we have a lot more processing being done on the client side, the actual way that people perceive the loading of the website is not always attributed to the backend part of it, to all the processing that PHP does before it starts sending the first bytes to the browser. But it has also a lot to do with what happens in the browser, right? After all the JavaScript is being given to the browser, now deal with all of this information and execute it in an order that makes sense. And so those are two different parts to the problem that I start explaining to people. Backend and frontend, right? So to the backend, we're talking about whenever people do a request to a certain website, it goes to the server, and then the server starts working on building that request or that HTML that is sent back to the server. And plugins have an influence on that, but also queries on the database, right? What is your experience with dealing with those issues and those problems? Because we do have long-running queries on WooCommerce, and that is quite common, right?
It is.
How do we get to know that a database is running a long query?
Usually, we are going to go back to the APM tool because that's our standard at Kinsta. We always use the APM tool or something similar that will help you. Because the problem there is that you need to know the time that it will take for that transaction to complete in the request, on that specific request. So the best option for that would be to use an application monitoring tool. It could be ours, but it could be New Relic or something else.
I think there's also the slow query log. Do you have, does Kinsta enable that by default? I know a lot of hosts do, and they...
We don't. If necessary, we can ask our system admins to enable it. But usually, it's not really necessary, because usually if we search if we enable the APM tool, we will figure it out very quickly what's causing that to happen.
Yeah. And Marcel, I wish there was another way besides using an APM tool to capture these queries. Like, you can use Query Monitor, but that requires that the query happens during your transaction as you're thinking. And it's the slow query might happen during the cart or the checkout process or a visitor viewing the homepage or something like that. And then you don't have a chance unless, because they're not Query Monitor, only runs in the background.
And also the experience that I have activating those monitoring systems on the plugin level, it's also weighed on the PHP worker, right? So it's kind of like also using the same slow train to figure out why the train is slow, right? So you put more weight on it and asking yourself, what is the other half that is causing the train to go slow, which is not a very effective way to do it, right?
True. That's true. And so
we have to go on in the layer below it. As you're saying, APM tools will definitely be a good one to do that. As far as the front end part is concerned, so is there anything that a hosting company can do to also help people identify if the front end is the one that is dragging the website or the loading of the website?
You mean the browser side of things?
Yes.
Yeah, we will usually guide our clients to try to understand what's going on. Usually, like I was saying earlier, what I do is I point them to the browser code inspection tools, because usually you'll see right away if there's something causing a delay there or if there's a script failing. You'll usually see there through the console or the network tab, regardless if you're using Chrome or Firefox. It's very similar. So,
or Safari, I just wanted to say that. So, the network tab is actually very, very important. And also the fact to know how much a script is being taken, how much a script is wasting time to be loaded and all of that stuff. Not only be consumed after it's loaded, but while it's loading, right?
Mm-hmm.
Avalara wants to make sure that your projects go smooth. And part of that includes doing it right with their API. Their resources cover it all to help your clients manage sales and use, excise, GST, VAT, and other tax types across the U.S. and abroad. You'll find it all on their site, and you'll be learning more on how they can help you during their sponsorship of Woo Dev Chat. Want to learn more? Just go to developer.avalara.com.
Can you tell us a little bit more about HTTP2 and the and I think version 3 is also being talked about. This is an area that I have very little knowledge on, but I do think it's very important also to people to know about that the hosting company has a web server, let's call it like that, and Nginx, Apache, whatever we use. And that is also very important, not only for the PHP processing part of it, but also for the delivering of the assets on a web page, right? If you have a website that has 40, 50, 60 different assets to be loaded, we cannot just simply download them all at the same time, right? There are challenges to that. Can you speak a little bit about that? What is HTTP2 and what's coming to the future to help us to deal with that?
Yeah, we do actually have it for some time now. Previously it was called HTTP over Quick.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes.
So I actually didn't see HTTP2, the plain HTTP2 at Kinsta. So I cannot really tell the difference there. Personally, it was always this fast due to Quick. So
basically what we have is HTTP only allowed you to download one asset at a time, right? So it was somewhat hindering the process of loading assets in terms of the quantity of JavaScript images and whatnot, right? But then we also have CDNs, which come into place, which is being served from another server and have the ability for you to get assets elsewhere, maybe a data center that is near your city where you're asking the website from. What I understand the basic difference is between HTTP 2 and 3 is relying on UDP protocol instead of TCP protocol to transmit all of that. But I am not 100% sure about that. The main thing I guess people need to know about this is that whenever possible, use HTTP 2. And when 3 comes available, also use that. I remember when HTTP 2 came along, some of the hosting companies were putting that information on their marketing side or marketing end of it as being something revolutionary, something that was very important for people to have, right? Do you recall that?
On HTTP2?
Yes.
I do.
But nowadays, I guess everybody's is doing HTTP2, right? It's
pretty much the standard nowadays. So
yeah,
I don't think I've seen HTTP1 for a long time.
Right. What do you think are the lesser known WooCommerce features or plugins or things that you have seen that you didn't know perhaps that existed, or some story that you might have that was something very weird going on the back end that you've taken probably a little bit longer to figure out? Do you have any stories like that you could share with us?
I had one of them with a client 2 weeks ago. I believe it was 2 weeks ago that I basically had to research their website for quite a few hours. And it was actually due to a caching plugin. So I'm not going to name the plugin, but it's a very popular one. And it was actually causing a conflict with our cache. It was basically trying to cache our cache. And it was slowing things down, causing a loop. The client was very frustrated with that. Of course, the client, not everyone does that, but the first reaction that you have, if a site is working fine and the next day it doesn't work, usually you'll point to the web hosting company, right? So they were pretty convinced that it was something with our cache, but in reality, it wasn't. It was just a plugin that had been updated. They had updated some of the code, and it was causing problems with their particular website.
One of my first steps when I'm troubleshooting a slow website is disable all of the performance things. All the things that come to be making a site run faster, I disable them and see how things are, especially if you know there's server-side caching on the host, there's no reason to have other caching plugins installed or active, because yeah, you get these weird collision effects or infinite loops, which then ironically cause the like to crash or run out of resources.
Some caching plugins will detect, nowadays they will detect during installation if you're using Nginx or something like that, and they will disable some of the functions that don't work properly, like page caching is one of them. You have many plugins that as soon as they detect that you're using Nginx and you have caching enabled, they disable that right away, because it works very well for Apache servers, for example. It works pretty well and IIS, but when you do that on Nginx, it's going to cause the site to become way slower sometimes.
It's sometimes also difficult to figure out what type of caching is being used on a specific hosting company, right? Because I always try to put myself into the perspective of a newcomer to the system, right? Somebody who heard WooCommerce is great, WordPress is awesome, it scales and everything. And once they start digging in and they reach the cache topic, it's hard to figure out, even like to start choosing a hosting company. And we talked about this in the previous episode. That is like, okay, do I go with a hosting company that has more caching options or less? And if they have this, all these caching options, can I also use the plugins? Are the plugins smart enough to realize that the hosting is already doing some of the job and not conflicting with them? And unfortunately, the reality is that that's not the case. And there's a lot of conflict going on with the caching systems around the different options, right? And so in your experience, and particularly maybe in Kingsa, what is the ideal setup for WooCommerce? What is your opinion on that?
By standard, we don't recommend caching plugins if you're using ours, because we also offer a plugin of our own that will manage caching for you, that will delete the cache for a page that you edit, the cache for that page alone. It's not going to clear the entire cache for the website. So in most cases, you don't really need anything else. However, if you do, because there's also that possibility that you need to do object caching and other optimizations that our plugin is not going to offer you, in that case, we sometimes recommend WP Rocket, for example, which does a pretty good job. It detects that Nginx is in use right away, disables the page caching feature. But apart from that, just the standard recommendations, it's usually, if you're using caching already, don't add layers of caching, because that's not going to help much.
Right. There are a lot of caching plugins out there that people use, and there are also a lot of tips that one can give about caching. Caching is not all of it. Resources are also very important. Do you feel that WooCommerce websites should scale automatically, meaning so whenever you have high traffic, more memory, more CPU, more PHP, workers should be allocated automatically? What is your opinion on that part?
It really depends on the case, but I think there should be set limits. It really depends on the case, but in most cases, it's security-wise, you should have a limit.
Okay.
That's one of the issues there. It's always convenience versus security, right?
Correct. That's the point I wanted to touch in, because people do think that the fire is running out, just throw more gas on it. And if you throw too much gas on it, it may explode. And there's a similar situation with hosting, right? So just throwing more resources at a website is not usually the answer. And there are dangers.
It's just a temporary band-aid. Yeah, it doesn't really help.
Yeah.
You want to be able to identify why, like, resources are running out. And that's where, again, an APM tool comes in handy to find out which functions are taking a long time or gobbling up the most amount of memory. And then actually going in and patching those and fixing them instead of just throwing resources at the problem, which is, like Andre said, it's a band-aid solution. And it goes back to the F1 analogy, right? Like, you wouldn't just keep throwing more gasoline into the car. You'd want to know, oh, why is it burning fuel 3 times faster than we calculated it's supposed to be, right? You wouldn't just keep throwing gas in there.
A good portion of our plans offered is the standard limit, which is 256 megs of RAM for PHP. And sometimes I find myself trying to explain to the clients that PHP, and this is good for developers to understand, developers already understand, but more store owners to understand that PHP is a text processor. It's just text going through it. If you're using, let's say, 1 gigabyte for PHP, it's not normal because it's just text, right?
Correct. Yeah.
So ideally, 256, it should be plenty for a PHP process in normal circumstances, of course.
Right. That's actually a good point, because we do see a lot of, I do see a lot of clients, the first thing that they ask about is, let's just increase the memory and that will fix it. And that's usually also not the case. How different is hosting for WooCommerce in comparison to a regular WordPress? What are like the main keys? Because we're talking about memory 256, we're talking about not opening up all the resources you can have. But what's the main source of, or what's consuming, let me rephrase that question. What brings WooCommerce to the table that requires you to have a different setup on the hosting?
It really depends on the website as well, because you have websites using WordPress without WooCommerce that use a lot more resources than a WooCommerce site, actually. So it will always depend on the situation, but usually the usage will come from plugins, from database structure that is not optimized. Usually what I see happening very often is that a store is running for 4 or 5 years without any sort of optimization. The records pile up, especially the ones from PostMeta, for example. Transients, when it comes to WooCommerce, is also very common for that to happen. So yeah, usually those are the culprits.
And those are a good idea to do before, like, holiday readiness the year before, ideally. But the reality is most store owners start around now or a couple of months ago. It's unfortunate because it's sort of like going down into the basement that you haven't been to in 4 or 5 years, and you're like, oh, like, what is all this crap? Like, do we need any of this? And then you start going through the different people who are responsible and like, oh, well, that guy, like, he hasn't been here for the last 3 years. We don't know if that's still in use. And there's tends to be a lack of documentation and paper trail of why this script was added. Where was it added? Was it using a plugin, or did we put it straight into the head, or did we put it in Google Tag Manager? And there's just a lot of general sort of messiness when it comes to this. And I'm curious what other recommendations you have for clients to do get ready for the holiday season, like in terms of load testing, profiling, like what would your approach be?
Load testing is definitely a good recommendation. try to optimize the database as much as you can. I cannot say that enough because it's usually one of the common culprits there. Also, depending on the websites, sometimes the order tables, they also pile up. Obviously, you cannot clean them, but usually a good optimization on the database, it will help quite a bit.
I actually have a client who gets 10 gigabytes of orders worth of information each season. He sells something related to fashion. So there's like a very specific short sales season. And then when he's done, he actually exports all of the orders into a Google spreadsheet and then deletes them from the database. He's allowed to based on whatever rules he needs to follow for the laws in his country. There's thousands and thousands of products, and all the products are no longer sold after that season. It's not something that you can buy again. So he actually deletes all of the products, and we have to delete all of the images for him manually because for whatever reason, deleting the products doesn't delete the associated images with those products. So we had to build something for him to do that. But yeah, so it's possible to do both, but it depends on the laws of your country. Like usually you have to retain the order information for at least 5 years or something. So I think that he puts it into a Google sheet in case the tax people come after him, certain questions or whatever. But yeah, it's certainly a good idea because the database keeps growing and growing. And if you have a successful store, that's a great thing. But you're also going to then need to pay for more and more hosting resources, especially RAM, to accommodate a database of that size. So being able to export what you don't need anymore and put it somewhere safe so that there's more resources available on the host for the store, I think is a really good.
Indexing also helps quite a bit on the database, indexing the entries.
We had already an episode where we talked about that, and it's actually incredibly amazing how that works and how that can fix various problems and long-running queries. I would like to also talk about security, which I think is very important. Have you seen security vulnerabilities happening lately on WooCommerce? And if you have experienced one that has stood out most, or if you have any stories around security that you would like to share, what have you seen? And if so, what are the recommendations you have to mitigating them?
Security-wise, lately, and when I say lately, I mean the last 3-4 years, I haven't seen anything that important. No. And even at Kinsta, usually we do have a team that manages that specifically. So even if that happens, it's usually the support team won't see it. We will see when it's resolved.
Obviously, the most recommended action would be always to keep up to date. And people actually have an issue with keeping things up to date, right? They are afraid of hitting the update button.
That's the problem. That's exactly the problem. And we are going to go to the plugins again because it's usually because of using so many plugins that they have to keep everything in sync. Sometimes if you update one plugin, it's going to cause problems in a certain function that another plugin is trying to fetch, and that creates a snowball effect. So usually people are afraid to do that.
Exactly. I would like to ask two more questions before we call it a wrap today. The first question has to do with headless WooCommerce. What is your opinion on headless setups? And I don't think we can tell that they are becoming popular. I think there was a phase in the past where they did become very popular, and then people thought, okay, maybe that's not exactly what we wanted because it's even harder to set up than a regular e-commerce setup, I would say. But do you have an opinion on the headless thing of it, and if it is actually more, if it is recommended for people to adopt the headless approach to e-commerce website or not?
It's also going to depend on the type of websites, but I've seen quite a few of them. And when it comes to performance, if it's a simple website, you really notice the difference. I've seen better performance on blogs, for example, not specifically on WooCommerce. I don't think I've seen an headless commerce store anywhere yet. The headless installations that I've seen so far are usually blogs and personal sites and whatnot. But you can notice the difference, yes.
Right. It's only been very recent that WooCommerce, the core part of it, has updated all their REST API endpoints so that you're able to fully integrate WooCommerce in a headless environment. And I'm talking about the cart endpoint, the checkout endpoint, and all of that. storing the session for that particular anonymous user through a REST API calls is not an easy thing to do. And now you obviously can. And I haven't obviously also not seen a very popular website using a headless WooCommerce setup yet. But I do believe that they bring some advantages, as you said, depending on the type of the website that we're talking about. And it certainly reduces the stress on the server side, which requests that we make on that particular setup are more about very specific parts of the information that we need for the website and not the whole website itself. So there's a lot of improvement on that part. But yeah, I haven't seen them a lot. Have you, Mike, have been in contact with headless WooCommerce websites, or have you seen them around?
No, I haven't seen any headless WooCommerce sites. I've seen one or two regular WordPress sites that were headless. I've seen more static WordPress sites, which I think those have a greater use case, especially if it's a blog where you don't need to do post requests or anything like that. Like I think there's a huge benefit there, because then you can just cache the entire site as HTML and serve it with Nginx, and very, very happy, very low resource utilization. But I think headless was one of those fads that, you know, a couple of years ago was like, oh, headless is amazing. And then everyone kind of realized like, oh, this is a lot of work and kind of painful, and we don't really get why this is supposed to be so much better. But I never tried myself, so that's just my impression. We haven't heard much about it in the last year or two.
Would you, Mike, charge more a client if they would ask you to build a headless WooCommerce website than a regular one?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, for sure. Like anything that adds complexity, you know, like when a client comes to me with their slow website and I find out they have a page builder plus a membership component plus WooCommerce, plus there's certain things that add up and you're like, oh, like you're going to be five times the amount of work, and hopefully they have the budget to accommodate it. So I think it's important not to overcomplicate things just for the sake of like, oh, look, we did it, which I think headless might have been in that arena, if I'm honest.
Yeah. Well, the actual adoption of the React framework within the WordPress system is also making people ask about which part of the front end should we make headless or dynamic, or hitting REST API endpoints rather than loading full pages. And the filtering system that WooCommerce has very largely benefit from that as well, I would say, because you just need to get a couple of product information and upload the whole page for that, right? And we know how filtering is very expensive on the resources as well. One last question that I would ask Andrea about is the AI part of the e-commerce. Have you seen a lot of people using AI lately to build websites, or is AI a topic in Kingsta in any shape or form?
We discuss it. We cannot be certain of how many people are using it, but I believe there's a large amount of people using it nowadays, especially if you're building a store, if you need product descriptions. And I know this because I did that myself when testing websites to obtain content and whatnot. I guess it's one of the most common uses for AI at the moment, because it saves you a ton of time, especially if you're the store owner and you need a description for something that you're selling, something that you're just adding to the website. AI is going to do a great job on that.
Understood. Yeah, definitely for product description and coming up with titles and all of that. I've seen that happening.
There's also support, but at Kingsta, we are not really discussing that at the moment, because one of the benefits of being a Kingsta client, that is the personal support that everyone gets. Right. And with AI, we would certainly lose that. But for certain business owners, it could make sense if it's something that you've seen that on AliExpress and sites like that. They already use AI, but it's not perfect. That's the card that you have. It's never perfect.
And you also seen it in other hosting companies related to WordPress offerings out there. But maybe where AI could be helpful is for those agents as well, so that they can use to better understand the client's issues or propositions or whatever there's happening. So as an agent, as a support agent, to use AI to help better serve the client, maybe that could be something that could be improved in the future, I guess. Because it's also very frustrating when you're talking to somebody on the other side and you're asking a couple of questions and they go through all of that basic questions about, did you uninstall and install, or did you delete this, or did you delete that? And although I understand it is important for those questions to be asked because it creates a context around what's happening, right? It's also sometimes frustrating for the client side of it to go through all of that process. And so maybe AI could help with setting up the context for that particular case.
I'd love to support query like systems have those kind of checklists generated by AI or their internal team. And then when they're delivered, you can instead, because, you know, I think support is one of the most frustrating parts of our job where I know what kind of help I need, but you don't always necessarily get it as quickly as you would like. And I understand that you need to do these, like on from Andre's side, he needs to ask these questions, like I need to make sure you did these five basic things before I get into the more advanced solutions. And some kind of like question list that had little check boxes that you could just tick inside of intercom or whatever kind of thing. So then the support technician could see really quickly, okay, these are the five things we needed them to do. And instead of being like, you know, I writing a five paragraph response of like, yeah, I did this, da-da-da. It's just like, boom, it took me a second to check. Steps were already taken. Please, let's go to the advanced good stuff where we actually solve the problem. I think that would be cool. I also have a question for Andrea before we wrap up is, what is the most memorable support case that you have involving WooCommerce? Like the one that made you go like, WTF, or like, wow, I can't believe that just happened, you know?
I never had a nightmare case, but I do remember a client from last year. I guess it was from last year that I actually helped them for a few days. When I say a few days, it was probably a week because he came from an Apache server. So there was nothing optimized for Nginx or caching whatsoever. From what I understood, the client had been hosted on a plain Apache server, cPanel. So I had to manually go through the URLs that they were using and make a list with their help, of course. We also had cache exceptions and whatnot because obviously they were experiencing some difficulties when it comes to performance because they were using all the PHP workers after some time, you know, when they had a lot of concurrent orders and whatnot. So that, from what I remember, yeah, it was one of the most difficult cases that I had there. Not difficult, but time consuming.
Mm-hmm. And before we go, I have one last question for you. And that is, I'm almost guessing the answer. Actually, I'm going to write the answer down before I ask you. It's a very, very obvious thing to me, I guess. I hope I'm not wrong. But what is your absolute favorite tool that you ever used to help people out with support?
I don't think I have a favorite one, to be honest. Are you referring to tools that we use internally?
Whatever you think is a good thing to share with us. One tool that has made your life a lot easier.
SSH, be completely honest. SSH.
Okay, that was not what I written here.
If you take SSH out of me, yeah, I cannot function without it.
It's actually, as developers, we would say the same. SSH is like as a lifesaver.
Yeah, WPCLI, something like that.
Yeah, I definitely agree. Mike, what is your favorite tool?
Well, maybe it's what you wrote down. It's probably, I'm usually doing performance-related stuff, so it'll be New Relic or another APM tool. But without SSH, like...
It's
going to limit my ability to help clients. So if a hosting company doesn't have SSH, I'm like, we got to get you somewhere that has SSH and an APM tool. Right?
Because you can do a lot through SSH, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, you even have like WPCLI's code profiler, right? So it's not the same as New Relic, but it gives you something to run off of, and you can't run that without.
Yeah, and the fact that it can create scripts that have a looping system that it can go over and over again, the same thing until something happens or gets solved or whatever. And also for the reporting, so if you want to log stuff and you want to quickly build a list of or measure time between A and B, something that is happening, all of that is possible with SSH. And definitely we should choose a hosting company that offers SSH. And I believe for hosting companies, it's difficult to make SSH a solid, very well-structured tool to use within a system that you don't want to accidentally give people access to stuff that they are not supposed to be doing on a server, right, through SSH. But I do believe that most of the hosting companies today now do a good job into not restricting too much so that we have not all the tools available, don't strip too much all the options, but also don't expand in a way where it might become dangerous and people are afraid to having those tools exposed. Well, Andrea, thank you so much for joining today's episode. It was a pleasure talking to you.
Same here. Thank you.
Wanted also to do a shout out to Roger Williams for also making this happen, and for Kingsa for giving us your precious time and picking up your brain on this all the subjects we talked about today. I hope we see each other sometime soon, because we are all talking from the wonderful country of Portugal. and this is me just getting some affiliate money from the tourism department. I hope they're hearing this. Thank you so much for coming up, Mike.
My pleasure.
Any last words before we close the episode today?
Oh, just thank you for your time. It was really cool to get the angle and perspective of someone who works with WooCommerce, you know, on a daily basis from a support perspective that's not from a plugin or a theme working inside the hosting industry. I think it's really cool. And we hope to have you back on someday.
Sure. Whenever you want to.
All right. Thank you so much for listening. This has been another episode of WooDev Chat. And we hope to catch everybody in our next episode.